गणपति गुम हवामहे कविं कवीनामुपमश्रवस्तमं ज्येष्ठराजं ब्रह्मणा ब्रह्मणस्पत आनश्रृण्वन्नूतिभिस्सेदसातनम् ॐ श्रीमहागणपतये नमः सदाशिवसमारम्भां शङ्कराचार्यमध्यमाम् अस्मदाचार्यपर्यन्तां वन्दे गुरुपरम्पराम् ॐ सहनाभवतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। नमस्कार, वेलकम एवरीबॉडी, थैंक यू फॉर जॉइनिंग, हैप्पी टू सी यू ऑल। सो इट्स नाइस न्यू ईयर, सो वी गेट टू स्टार्ट दिस एंड इट्स ऑलवेज एन ऑस्पिशियस ओकेजन, ऑस्पिशियस थिंग टू बी लुकिंग इनटू दीज थिंग्स, बिकॉज व्हाट हैपेंस इज We live our life. We go from one thing to the next, day in, day out, and life goes by, you know. Goes by, seems very quickly, and many things we want to look into, we don't really necessarily get to them like this. And to take time to look into things, more what's, this is looking more what's behind the scenes, not what's obviously in front of the scene, it's not an easy thing to do. It takes commitment, takes a lot of literally courage to do it, as you'll see as we keep going through it. That's maybe one of the reasons why it's a battle, to be on the battlefield. How courageous you have to be. Imagine you're in Ukraine now, right? What courage you need. So this is, of course, the inner battle that we look at. So it takes a lot to do, and in the end, eventually we have to look into it, because just living on the surface, continuing, okay, eventually, you know, we get a little tired of things and we get frustrated, I'm not finding what I really want in life, and then slowly we look at other things. So this is what this study is about, which today I'll give a small introduction to Bhagavad Gita and to the study of Vedanta in general, like this. So before we start going to the actual introduction and everything, what I'd like to ask is, each of you just say a few words, introduce yourself, because, you know, we'll all be here, some physically there in other places now that we have this. Actually, this is one of the things that COVID has brought, because I was teaching a Vedanta class for a few years at our Shivananda Center in San Francisco. During COVID, they actually closed down after so many years being there. And what happened is, so people were coming there, and then when COVID started, so I started doing it online instead. And then others joined, that many are not in the area, that others otherwise couldn't come. So I actually made the avail a way to do it without being there in person. So this is, so it always opens up all these things. So now we have the option in person and like this. So I'll ask each person, just say a few words, what made you, you know, what your background, name, a little bit background, what made you come to this? Then we'll go into the main topic. So. Let's see if we can do it like this, that people can see. We'll just start from the room here, then we'll go to virtual. So we'll start here. We'll start with Shri here, because he's coming first in the screen.
my full name is Shri Ganeshan, and I live in San Jose. I've been in Silicon Valley 25 years here. Can you guys hear me on Zoom? Yeah? Okay. I have two kids, and I've been wanting to read and understand Bhagavad Gita for a while. So I'm so happy to get the topics that I think you. I look forward to getting more deeper into it.
Oh, good. Yeah. Good. And since we're just going to order, you see on the screen, I think Lakshmi said yes.
Hello.
Oh, okay, it'll be Michael then.
Go ahead. I'm Michael Gonzalez. I just moved here from Modesto, but Yeah, I've heard this has had a big impact on like a lot of people, and it's like a big part of like Hindu philosophy. So, kind of, I feel like I need to be guided with this too, because I don't know where to even start. But I'm happy to be here with everyone too.
Good. So maybe Lakshmi's kind of hiding behind him there, yeah?
Namaste, everyone. I'm Lakshmi. I live in Fremont. So I've been wanting to really learn Bhagavad Gita in depth for a while now. Mm-hmm. I've listened to discourses online. I have my kids who go to Chinmaya Mission, mm-hmm. so I have listened to their discourses as well. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to be... you know, that was on and off. So I was looking for something where I can be a part of, you know, come attend the classes regularly, where I can be physically present, you know. Mm-hmm. I'm so happy that this place is just 5 minutes away from my home.
Oh,
so,
wonderful.
You know, there's no excuses to miss. So thank you so much for this, you know, for this class and for this mm-hmm. community.
That's good. I'm very happy you can join us.
Happy to be a part of this.
Thank you for joining. And then one more in person here.
Hi, I'm Ekta. I live in Pleasanton. I wanted to learn Gita for a long time, and I started reading by myself, but didn't understand much. And when Gajananamji sent an email, I was so happy. Okay, good. Such a good start, you know, for off 2023. And then he kind of suggested that you should do it in person. And I'm really happy that he suggested it, because I was thinking of doing online, and I knew that it wouldn't be, I just push myself to pick up and then get out of bed and then drive through. So it's just nice. It's a different experience. Hopefully I learn.
Oh, good. Good job. Yeah. I'm glad you can come. Let me go like this so everybody can just see whoever. I'm just going to go on the screen also in the order so you can all see the person well. Where is that? This is Raji next.
Hi, I'm Raji. My full name is Rajeshwari. I'm out of Minneapolis. I was so excited when I found this class as online, because that's the good thing about COVID, I guess. Like, even though I don't have anything nearby, I have the opportunity to learn these things at least online. In person would have been great, but I'm really excited for this, because this is something I have always wanted to do for many years.
Okay, very good to have you.
Thank you.
Let me just use the power of Zoom and zoom in on Radha.
Sorry.
You're zoomed in on Radha.
a lot of snow and rain, but it's good. The trees are happy. And I've studied the Gita on and off for many years, and it always goes deeper each time. And studying in a format like this, where I'm going to show up every week and have a commitment and hopefully study some of it in between, it's just a great opportunity. So thank you, Gajananda, and I'm happy to study with all of you.
Thank you, Radha. So Radha one, now's the other Radha. Let's spotlight on her. There we go.
Om Bhagavate Vasudevaya. I'm Radha number two. same Radha, all one Radha. So, okay. Yeah, I've taken some classes with Vidyananda before, and I just really enjoy the teaching style. When I saw he was going to do this Bhagavad Gita class, and that it was going to be also online, so that makes it available for me, since I'm doing a bit of moving around in different places right now. But it's not near the center yet, but maybe will be for a weekend. That would be nice. We'll see. I just had some study of Bhagavad Gita before, and at one point, regular reading, and then at another point, regular reading. So hopefully this can get me back on track again for regular study.
Good to have you.
So
So next I see Aaron over here. Let me spotlight him. There we go.
Amici e suoni di Shinji used to call me Rudra Chaitanya. I was on the path in the 80s with the Shivananda Yoga Centers. I am currently speaking to you from Uttarkashi in India, where I'm standing in between here, where Swamiji was, Swamiji's remains were put in the Ganga. Jana Samadhi, and in fact it's auspicious not only because we are together today, but because also it is Makar Sankranti, the beginning of the northern path of the sun, according to the Hindu system, and I had the good fortune to take Ganga Snan, Ganga Bath today. It's cold. I've been studying Gita a lot in the last 10 years. I must have studied it, not just read it, but studied it maybe 40 times in the last 10 years. And I enjoyed it a lot. I read it in English, not in Sanskrit, although I do understand many of the Sanskrit terms. And I read Guru Dev Shivananda, version and commentary this morning. And still add that what I'm studying, perhaps we will enlarge this group, what I'm studying is the Advaita Vedanta version understanding of Gita. There are other understandings as well, and other versions, other conceptions of it as well. I will enjoy tremendously being with you. Thank you.
Thank you. So you're in Shivananda Kutir, huh?
No, I'm not in Shivananda Kutir. If you know the Vishnudevananda Tapovan.
Oh, Tapovan, yeah, right next to it. Right next door.
Swami Janardhanatha.
Oh, okay. So Babuha. Oh, good. Baruch Haba.
Thank you. In fact, I saw him this time.
Oh, nice, nice.
I went for Sunday prayers.
Oh, nice. So he's saying, Swamiji, that's his guru, my guru, Swami Vishnudevanandaji. That's who he's referring to.
Yes.
So, last but not least here, we have Shaila.
I'm Shaila. Coincidentally, I started Vedanta class 2 years back with Vedantaji. That is when, you know, my study with Vedanta continued for last 2 years. So, and from then on, I've been on and off, you know, studying with, you know, the Vedic Gita on my own, picking up, you know, one chapter reading, so we do get a second good to learn from the Vedanta again. I'm excited to be here in the class, hoping to go in person in the next 3-4 weeks. Yeah.
Thank you. Very good. So my turn to zoom in on me. I'm sorry, but you'll zoom in on me for a lot of the course, but let me just say it so I can see everybody. There we go. Very good. So my name's Gajananam. Most of you, some of you are new. I know many of you. So I lived in the Shivananda Yoga Ashrams, Shivananda Yoga Centers from the 90s. And then, my Buddha Swami Vishnudevanandaji. And for the past 10 years, I've been studying Vedanta in a traditional way, like we're doing here, best as I can, with Vijay Kapoorji, who teaches right here. He's disciple Swami Dhananji. And so he's the local acharya who teaches Vedanta classes, and can learn from him now too. We're doing, actually, after going through the major texts. Many of the major texts, we went back to Gita and a much taking a commentary which is considered much more advanced, one of Swami Shankarananda, those who are familiar. And so what I find is, as we'll discuss in the introduction here in general, that there are many spiritual practices, a lot of them very good preparations for Vedanta like this. And so having done many other things, Vedanta made much more sense, I'm sure, than if I came without some background. Not that, don't think, oh, I don't have the background, I can't study. Don't think like this. Wherever we're at, we can learn and grow, we can learn from this in this way. So in this way, I feel very fortunate that step by step had somehow come to this, as many of us have. And it can have tremendous insight from this, from what Vedanta has to offer. So in this case. So in any case, what happens is the study of Vedanta we'll get into with a little bit of background now as we move into it. Because what happens is why we came here, or we open the Bhagavad Gita sometime, or we do some spiritual practice, what is it for? We're looking for something, obviously. Why would you do anything? You know, why do you get up in the morning? If there's, you didn't feel there's something, you're looking forward to something, you wouldn't even get out of bed, right? Like this. So I'm glad we got some of you out of bed today, right, to come here. At least that's something. Actually, if somebody's depressed, you don't bring them for Gita class or bring them for yoga, meditation, you bring them, make them run, make them dance, make them, you know, go to movies, something to pull them out, active. And then after they're active, slowly they can make the action, you know, from tamas you go to rajas, action. Then you can slowly get to something more soothing, more sattvic. But right away it doesn't work. So, so in any case, what happens is, the premise for what we're going to be discussing is this. Everybody in the world is looking for certain things. There's nobody in the world that isn't striving doing something. And so people are looking for certain things. People want to enjoy certain things. They gain happiness from some things. So one person is gaining happiness because they work hard and make a lot of money, so that makes them happy. So they strive for that, like this. Somebody else is, you know, striving. They want to be very successful in something. Some art makes them happy, so they do this, right? Somebody else, family makes them happy, they want to spend more time with family. So they work in everything, but in order to have the time for that. Like some of you from Indian communities here, Indian community I'm familiar with here, every week in that community, so many of them are together every weekend. Every weekend, somebody's house, somebody's birthday, something, or the temple or something, every weekend. To have that culture where they're from together, like this. So, you know. So since where my wife is from, that group, so some of the time we're there. So people do certain things like this. They want to get this happiness, enjoyment from that in all different ways. That's one thing. Another thing people want also, people also want to feel secure. That's another thing. We want security. So we want security. So that's why the insurance companies are doing wonderfully, making a lot of money, because we want to be secure. So here it's this. Maybe in slightly older times, it's still in some places having a son gives the security, because there isn't the retirement funds in this, and the daughter will be married off, go somewhere else, but the son will be there. You know, so you know, the insurance company won't necessarily pay, and the son, their son won't necessarily take care. The daughter might take care better, but just. People want security, so they think in a certain thing will give me security. Like this, so many things. So this is a second thing. We're trying to get security in different ways, in this way. You know, the country wants to have the military for this, right? All different things. I identify with something. I identify with a certain group because that gives me a sense of belonging. Now I feel secure, not just alone myself. All different things like this. We want that as well. So that's second thing that very much we want. Like this. And then also one other thing that everybody wants to be at peace, right? Who doesn't want to be at peace? I'm going to just do one thing with my, that I have all the power here in Zoom, I just do a mute all, because just it's just a little easier if sounds are coming from here and there. So that's the other thing, everybody in the end of the day wants to be at peace, everybody wants to sleep peacefully at night. Who doesn't want to sleep peacefully at night? Right? Like this. We want that. But we don't want to be disturbed. Like this. It's nice how here on tombstones, right? They write R.I.P. Rest in peace. So people hope, okay, after this life I'll rest in peace later. One thing though, you know, if you look at it like this, what's the guarantee I'll rest in peace later if I don't know how to rest in peace now? Like this. If I'm disturbed during the day, I'll be disturbed at night. If I'm disturbed in life, how, why will I be not be disturbed in afterlife, wherever, whatever is there? But in any case, so this other thing I want to, that's another thing I want. So these things we're all looking for. And to some extent we find them, but who can really say that they feel, okay, I feel happy, I'm happy, that's it. And I'm happy, you know, yes, I'm happy when my team wins or when political situation is like this or when I achieve these things or when there's this balance in the family. But this happiness is a very delicate thing because one small thing and then where did all that happiness go? Like this. Okay. So it's a very, so dependent like this. You know, you're happy in this, but then the son does something like this, or daughter something like this, or the spouse says something like this, or boss something like this, okay, no. So where we're searching for it, we're searching and trying to find, but it's never lasting. We want we want lasting happiness. We want lasting security, right? We want lasting sense of peace, but we don't find it. We find only a partial way. And if you look around the world, you know, everybody in the world is in the same condition, same situation. And barely do we see anybody that you can really say, hey, maybe this person, you know, maybe this person isn't caught up like this, you know. Some Mahatmas maybe you can say like this, but very rare like that that you can say. So meaning that what we say is the issue is, if we're trying to get in certain ways and it hasn't worked for so long, but we still look for it in this way, the programmer is there, maybe this time it'll do it, maybe this time. You know, maybe that was, but maybe this thing, like this. So, but it never really works. So then one has to think about, is this the right way to look for it? Is this what's really going to do it? And Suvedanta is saying that's the thing, that we're looking the wrong way, that's why we're always frustrated. If we really try to find through worldly things, we can maybe find, you know, a little more refined, a little more peace or happiness from, but it's still very conditional. And so that conditional thing is not going to be, you know, long-lasting, because it's up to circumstance. So what is it that's keeping it from us? Actually, this small introduction to this, obviously, those who are familiar with people say four goals of life, right? Purushartha, four purusharthas. This is for people, purusha, the human. So four goals for the human. One is the artha, you know, wealth, possession, meaning security. That's what it is. It's security. What is possession for like this? Okay, some enjoy, but mostly it is security too. That's the main thing. So security. Artha, kama, enjoyment, like this, I want. And actually, because I want, I don't feel just joy within myself, so I'm trying to, you know, outsource, get it from the outside. Let me enjoy things from outside through the senses. I can taste nice things, I can see nice things like this, and I can hear interesting things, so give some, you know, the mind is happy by these stories. But the thing is, so this is the kama, this is other thing. Moksha, I want to be free, meaning I want peace. What is freedom? I want peace. I don't want to be disturbed. That's really moksha. Because the thing is, I can live in this country where I'm free, how I want. But the thing is, somebody, the next door, they're making some noise, I'm disturbed. Because it's my mind isn't free from. It's I'm binding myself in the end, because now, if that's not disturbing me, I'm free from it, right? if they move away and there's no noise, okay, now I'm at peace. But then my mind will bring up something else and disturb me. So in the end, the disturbance comes from me too. So moksha. Dharma in there is somewhere in the middle, but dharma as something in action in order to get to somewhere else. Let me get to a better place later. You know, a lot of dharma is seen as one way is doing actions in the righteous way so that then I can go to a better place. I can go to the heavens or higher plane or something like this. Then really it's artha kama, because just like I'm saving now so I can retire or I can go on vacation, I'm saving my punya, my merit, so that I can go to the heaven and be at peace there. So it's like this. So I can get to something. So it's really very similar. If I see dharma, which is the third of the four purusharthas, then it really ties together as I am the, as artha kama. If it's because it's the right thing to do, it's not, then it's really that's the right thing to do is what you do. A machine works properly, right? We have a computer algorithm works properly, that's what it does. So it's what you do, so it's not really a goal, it's just what, you know, that's how you do it, finished. How you articulate so you can speak correctly, done. So in this way, so that's why dharma wasn't put into this, when in this small picture. So again, these four goals we can say for human, artha, the security we want, kama, the enjoyment, happiness, the dharma, righteousness, which you can take either way as what you should do or as just really part of the cycle of security and enjoyment, happiness, and moksha, I want peace really, like this. So what happens is somehow we're not achieving these, and we say, okay, so these regular means aren't there. So I just want, so then slowly when I look into it, I have to see, hey, I'm not finding, is it because of the external things? I can keep saying it's because of the external things, external conditions. But as we look into it, we slowly have to, you know, the finger that's pointing all over the problems because of you or you, slowly, slowly we have to look and see, introspect, where is the disturbance really coming from? Is it from the world or is it from me? Am I doing it like this? So we have to see, slowly, slowly, if we really look at it closely, the issue is going to be within myself. And Vedanta is saying, hey, you know, everybody here has heard, you're the aham brahmasmi, tattvamasi. You are the unlimited universal consciousness, unchanging, ever free, finished. Who hasn't heard this? Raise your hand. You've heard, right? You've looked into a little. But you don't see it. Why don't you see it? Right? Very interesting. We don't see it, so why not? You know, still we get caught up in this other cycle that I'm trying to get the happiness, security from somewhere else. Why? So when looking into this, the rishis that looked into, they found a few the reasons within us why we don't see it like this, when they looked into and analyzed the human condition. What is the reason why? There are a few doshas in our mind, right? Dosha, not the dosha that here, we have the dosa hut right here, not the masala dosa and other dosa like this, not that kind. They're in the Himalayas, they're in North India, so there's no dosha, that kind of dosa there then. Now, dosa is universal in India and in the world, then it wasn't. And you get dosha, looking at ourselves. The issue is, First issue is what we call malam, impurity in the mind. That's first one. Second issue is what we call vikshepa, the unsteadiness of the mind. Third is what we call avaranam, or avidya, covering or uncloud, not being, there's like a covering or a lack of clarity, of an ignorance, we say like this. These are the three blemishes they found in our mind. Because of that, we're not able to see this, to see beyond, you know, these ideas that are I'm so caught up in. And so what happens is, what are these? First of all, the malam, we say impurity. Nowadays, with the technology is so wonderful that it gives great examples, because you say, okay, impurity in the mind, like a dirt in the mind, let me scrub it like this. So malam was used, but it's kind of like a virus, right? You know, virus in the computer, so it's more similar to a virus, because a virus is not what the program you want it to do, right? It's doing something else, causing trouble like this. So these viruses in the mind, they're things that are causing me trouble. Actually, they cause me trouble, and then I cause other people trouble too. One place in the Gita, Lord Krishna is saying how one of the things about the master is that the master then doesn't disturb, you know, isn't disturbed by the world, and also doesn't disturb the world, like this. So these come in different forms. And actually, so many of the stories that we hear of the gods and demons, right? Asuras and the asuras and devas, like this. It's really what are the asuras, right? We can say, I'm looking for asuras out there. Nowadays, you can see many, very easy for us to find asuras too, and especially in the political realm, you know, we can easily point out, I'll say, this one is, like that. But the issue is, what are the asuras inside here? Because they're the ones causing me trouble. So the anger, the greed, the jealousy, all these things, those are like viruses in my mind. Do I want to be angry? Anybody here wants to be angry? You don't want to be angry, but I get angry anyway. Anybody here want to, you know, do I want to be jealous of other people? Liz? Don't want to be content? I want to, but anyway, that virus comes in. So this is the malam. We have this issue in the mind. So this keeps me away from my own peace, because I just want to be here at peace. But then I get angry at you because of something you do. And really, it's just conditioning a mind, in my mind, because that, whatever you did, it just triggered something in my mind. Somebody else does something that's much more terrible, but that doesn't trigger in me, so I'm okay with that. That's fine, like this. So it's my conditioning, and I'm caught up in that. So that's the first issue we have. Because of this, I'm so caught up, I can't then see beyond it. So that's first. The vikshepa is that the mind is unsteady. The mind is unsteady, so if you want to be at peace, but the mind is running around everywhere, worried about political situation, worried about the floods here and everything, right? Worried about financial situation, worried about what will happen to me if, right? Everything's fine. But if this, then what will be, right? There are so many people that have, you see, people that are living very poor and simple, a lot of them have, not everybody, many have less worries. We have so much more a lot of the time, we have much more worries. Some of the time, we have more artha, so then it causes more worry, we get less secure. And look, the rich are richer, they need more security, like this. There's a story from, I'm not sure exactly where it's from, where they say like this, that there was a, some boys walking with his uncle in the street, and this young, hasn't seen so much, so policeman is taking somebody with handcuffs. He says, oh, what's this? Oh, that person was a criminal, right? So the police is taking because he did something bad. Oh, really? Okay. Then later, there was, you know, in a police car, there was somebody in the back police car, and there were a few policemen around there. Said, oh, what about this one? Well, he must be a greater criminal, so there's more around like this. Then later, a minister was coming, and the minister, whole entourage of security. What about this one must be very big criminal, so much security. So look, gets a very powerful position now. I'm a very powerful person, how much more security needed? But in any case, the vikshepa, the mind is unstable. So I just want to be peaceful with myself, but my own mind doesn't let me have the peace. It's running around worried and making, bringing up all the scenarios, like all this stuff. Think of it, in our life, so many good things, so many nice and peaceful things, but the mind dwells on the worry and negative ones more than this. It's like if I have some pain and I go to the doctor, and the doctor says, you know what, just to rule out, we're going to just take a small biopsy, just to rule out, you know, it's a 5% chance in this case, just to rule out, 5%, 3% chance. Do we dwell on the 95% or the 5%? We dwell you know, 95% of the 5% chance that it could be something more serious. So like this. So in this way, the vikshepa is next problem. Mind is so restless in the end, so it's hard for me to see clearly. If you think of it, if you have a body of water, and the water is sitting there, and first of all, because it's sitting for an extensive period, a lot of moss and stuff builds in it. Or it's murky, muddy, like from the rain now, you know, a lot of dirt comes in. So since it's very murky, you can't see very clearly into the water. You can't see down. Because it's, so that's like the malam, not letting you see clearly. Then the vikshepa will be like the water is moving, right? There's waves, ripples from the wind, it's moving around. And because that you can't see clearly down, also because of that. That's the vikshepa is not letting you see clearly. So those are these two issues, the mala and vikshepa. The avaranam, the covering, or avidya, ignorance. Avidya is the covering. What is the covering? It's ignorance. Like for instance, you know, like some people coming on Tuesday learning how to read Sanskrit. We've been doing that. Coming meaning coming to Zoom. Before the pandemic, we were people sitting here doing, now we're people sitting at their home on the internet doing. So there's an avidya, an ignorance, when seeing here, written in English, Srimad Bhagavad Gita. Okay, so they can read. But then the moment it's in Sanskrit saying that, there's avidya, I don't know, can't read it. Now you study just a little bit how to read, now Srimad Bhagavad Gita, you can read. Okay, now that ignorance is gone. So it's an ignorance, because of that I can't see it clearly. So there's certain ignorance about myself, the consciousness, that I don't see it clearly, that I don't see that I'm this consciousness which isn't limited by everything. So there's an unclarity about that, an ignorance about that. The cover, we say the covering itself is the ignorance, like this. So in this way, there's these different mantras for the guru. One of them is saying, I'm not coming to mind in a second. It's saying that what happens is the blindness due to the disease is the covering. And then the guru, what the guru does is just puts the ointment that helps to take that away. Because it's just a covering that I don't see clearly, takes it away. And then, like this. This is it. This is that. That's what it is, just clarity. So actually, Vedantic teaching is just pointing out, clarifying. So clarifying understanding. The whole methodology, how it is next week, we'll go a little bit more into that. But methodology of it, very simple like this. So in this way. Something I chant so regularly, now it doesn't come to the mind. Okay, it doesn't have to come today, next time. But in any case, so like this. So this ignorance is what really Vedanta is pointing out. Because what happens is, the spiritual practice, different things, what are they for? That's what we have to know. And so different spiritual practices are for dealing with these things. Just like if you go to a doctor, different medications will be given for different problems you have. Whether it's the Western medication, or Ayurvedic medication, or home remedy, it's for a specific thing, right? Like this, you know. So for that, then it'll be given. So here also, the different practices are for specific things. So I have the malam in my mind. So for this one, karma yoga is specifically for this, taking care of this mala. Karma yoga, we'll go into to some extent in the Gita as we study. So then doing activity, if I'm less centered around myself, then a lot of the things slowly get resolved. If I'm less attached to exactly rigid about how things are, I do my best and leave it, you know, too, as an offering. You know, if I can just leave 10% of it in the God's hands, 10% already, instead of carrying the whole world on my shoulders, I'll carry 90%, I'll feel a little freer. So in this way. So then a less troubled mind. So karma yoga is specifically for this. Like this. Then vikshepa, my mind is restless. Like this. So karma yoga, we can call it upasana, we can call it Raj Yoga Bhakti Yoga. You can say if you're saying four paths of yoga, put Raj Yoga Bhakti Yoga here. If you take the Vedic way, you'll say Upasana, because karma will mean activity. All the activity is done in a way instead of for binding, but for freeing. That's the whole science of karma yoga. You have to do activity. How to do activity in a way that will be less binding, more free. That's really the whole secret of karma yoga. Then Upasana means the mind, because it's what my mind is focused on, whether in meditation, worship, or even day-to-day life, because my bhava, my attitude in my day-to-day life, like this. Very simple example, attitude day-to-day life. Swami Ram Surupanandaji, people who've come in classes have heard his name, who I used to always go stay in Uttarakashi with. I always stay next to Swami Premanandaji's ashram there. I used to stay with Swami Ram Surupanandaji for many years. So what happens, one time when he came, he used to come and stay with us a few weeks in the summer years ago, every year here in California. So I took him once to the Shivananda Center in San Francisco. And so there, one lady who was a resident, he asked her, oh, what do you do in this? She said, I'm a resident here and I serve, I clean the ashram and I'm a masseuse. So I said, oh, very nice. When you sweep, what do you think of? You know, do you think of it that you're just doing, you know, doing it for Narayana, doing it for the God? Are you thinking like this? And you're massaging, do you think of that? You know, he said, when I see somebody, first of all, I see the face, I think of it as Om, the face. That's as though superimposed like this. She said for months after that, everything she did was totally transformed just from looking at it like this for some time. So the Upasana, where the mind is at. So this is for expanding the mind, both having the mind be more present on the one hand and also more expansive. Because what happens, to look into what Vedanta is talking about, one thing, it's very subtle. So my attention has to be very subtle. Upasana means if I think of ideas of the God, the more and more subtle, then it makes it the mind easier for it to look into the subtlety of this. Because we're looking at the subtle most. So if I can't get to a certain level of subtlety without it, it'll be much harder to point at this. And also because the mind is, and by doing it also, any kind of upasana, sort of meditation worship, it brings the mind to be more and more present also, so less scattered. So that's why this upasana, I know upasana in a lot of Hindu, in the more modern term, will be taken as worship, but here upasana is the mental state in the worship meditation. In the Vedas, then, there's first the karma kanda, which talks about karma as worship. We take it later, like Gita took it out of there and put it into activity in day-to-day life as well. One of the masterful things in Gita, taking a step into life, not just from worship like this, but karma kanda and that, there's the latter part of it you could call upasana kanda, what to focus on in meditations and subtler things in this way. So the first part, the whole karma kanda, the major section of the Vedas like this, these two will be in there. Then lastly, for the avaranam, this takes care of the first two, malam vikshepa, like this. But then the avidya, the avarana, the covering, this one is the Vedanta is for this, the understanding. And there's a nice illustration, again, those who've come for some Vedanta classes have surely heard about, that what happens is, let's say our class here is in the evening, and so it's a little dark. So we're leaving, you walk out, it's dark outside. And as you step outside, you see a snake, right? You're very scared. You didn't know this. You live in Fremont. How long, Lakshmi? For a few years?
Yeah, for 8 years.
8 years, and you've never seen a snake. Suddenly there's a snake in Gajanan's yard here. Oh no, what are we going to do? So getting very scared like this. So the person freezes. So then you come and say, what happened? Oh, there's a snake. So I say, really? Oh, I didn't know. So we take out a flashlight, we put it on, and then we see it's the rope. Here it's a garden hose because we have a garden hose, but let's say the original story is a rope. So what happened is, because you couldn't see it clearly, you saw something and thought of something, and you decided what it is. Without seeing clearly, you decided. But then, once you saw it clearly, no problem. Now, if you were to chant a mantra, would it take the snake away? It wouldn't take a snake. If you did headstand, right? You did yajna, you did self, karma yoga, anything like this, none of those will take the snake away. You try to hit it, because you take a spade that's sitting there, you want to hit it, because it might be poisonous, might hurt me. Any of these things, they won't take away the snake. Now, once it's clear there, do you have to take the snake away? Once you know what it is, you don't need to do anything. So Vedanta is saying this is the issue, the source of the issue is this, the unclarity. You know, that I take myself to be, I'm aware, I experienced, I'm an awareful being, and then how things seem to be, I take it like that, and then I get caught up in this whole story. I superimpose so many ideas from my mind. The snake wasn't there, I superimposed the snakeness on the rope. There was never, I put my idea on it. So really Vedanta is saying in the end, if you look into it, you're the conscious being which is not limited, it's not clear, so the idea is what it seems to be you put on, that I'm this limited individual. That's in the end what it says, like this. But you know, we'll look into it, because not obvious, we just say, it's kind of like, you know, it's like if we were to come in and we'd be talking about some subtle things in physics, and we'd say, okay, first talk, we're going to talk about E equals MC squared. 10 minutes, we'll talk a little bit about it, done. Okay, let's go home. We know E equals MC squared. We know some idea about it, but are we convinced that this little table here is energy? Well, yeah, it seems like maybe. So, because of the subtlety, it takes some understanding. So here, because of the subtlety and because of my conditioning as well, you know, I'm living my life, my 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years, whatever it is. Whole time I take myself as individual. Now I say, okay, no, I'm not individual, I'm the conscious being. Oh yeah, okay, very easy. Takes a little bit to look through, right? Like this. Not that it's not possible to look through, but it takes something to look through. It takes some. This is one of the reasons why the Vedantic study, the way it's said, you go to Acharya, you study regularly for an extended period like this. Because the systematic study and systematic, you keep looking into it, slowly, slowly becomes clear like this. That, you know, okay, somebody comes, hears a few talks, goes, meditates on it for a few months. Okay, I'm that one. Okay, this is the, just like, you know, there's some kids that are 15 and doing their doctorate. There's some people like that. But that's the exception. Most of us, it takes a little time for it to sink in. And if you stay with it, then slowly, slowly becomes clearer. This is the thing, more and more clear like that. That's slowly, slowly as we look into it, because it's not obvious because of all the conditioning, we can say like this. So the Vedanta, Jnana Yoga, is for looking into this, to look into the what removed the snake is the light, and removed meaning, seeing it clearly. So it removes ajnanam, ignorance of myself who I am. It's jnanam, it's knowledge. So the other practices, the karma yoga, bhakti yoga, raja yoga, or karma yoga upasana, depending how you split it like this. Because the thing is, I see myself undergrad, I learned as the four paths, and graduate kind of like as karma upasana, because Vedanta, I went and studied then in Arshavida after coming from Shivananda Yoga Centers. But in any case, these then, they're very helpful and necessary, because otherwise it's much harder to see. It's kind of like without the preparation, very hard to see. So that's why they're very much important. But what really gets to the bottom is the understanding like this. That's what Vedanta is saying, and that's what we'll be looking into, you know, as we go through this. So this is just a little bit about then what is the problem, and what are the solutions for it, like this. Now, the Vedas are the original texts where all this is coming from. And the Vedas, as I mentioned, the Karma Kanda is the majority of it, and the small section towards the end is the Upanishads. The Upanishads, they teach Vedanta. There, the Vedanta is in there. The rest has the Karma and Upasana, the mantras, worship, the meditations like this. They're all in there. So the Upanishads, they're pointing at this. They're the ones, like I said, the Tattvamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, there's the Mahavakyas that pointed out, like the E equals MC squared. The rest of the Upanishad is preparing the ground for it. So this is where this is, this section, the Vedas, is from there. So the Vedas, the special thing about them is that we say that we call Shruti. Shruti means that which is heard. It's not something that somebody sat down one day, heard from somebody and wrote down, but it's the direct what the rishis, where rishi means somebody who sees, meaning had insight, very clear sight at the universal truths and put them down. Veda means knowledge, like this. And what happens is the other parts are there, the earlier parts, because not everybody's ready for looking into this. So if somebody's not ready, let them do some other things. I still have many desires to get to things. Okay, do it, but do it in a righteous way. Do it in a way of the work, do it with, you know, proper worship and this, in a way it creates the right atmosphere and purity, then easier to do. Or you want to, you know, have vision of the God, you know, vision of the God, not just see I am that, but okay, so here are ways to meditate on. So it gives other solutions as preparatory things. Because the thing is, if I take the God as, I'll pray to the God in the right way and will help me to get the things, I can do that. Very good. And then the next thing, okay, the God will help me then. How much harder do I need? It's endless, right? Where will it end? How much do I, then somebody gets a little tired of it. Is there something more than just, you know, the God will help me to get through the problems? Can I go beyond them? Then, you know, then the search starts to go to the later chapters, you can say. But in any case, so these are directly the universal truths that are always there that the rishi saw clearly and put down. So that's why we say shruti. And so it's something, and also shruti because something that one hears from the guru. The guru teaches. It's not called something that you read. Because as many of you said, you read some of it, but reading is very different than when you hear it can be explained directly. And hearing, when you read, you're the boss. How much I'll read, I'll skip. I'm a little tired in this. When you hear, you are more passive and it goes, you know, it goes directly to you. We'll talk more about the Sharavanam, this methodology, next week, but this is why it's called Shruti also. So these are the original texts. Any other Vedantic texts will be extrapolation from the Upanishads. Here, some of the prayers we say before Gita, I'll give a handout next time, we'll have them. Sarva Upanishato Gavaha Dugdha Gopala Nandanaha says that the essences in the Upanishads, Lord Krishna took the essence out, put it here. So it's showing this is from the Upanishad. And some of the verses are very clear where they came from. A lot came from Kathopanishad. One verse, except for one word, exactly word for word from Kathopanishad, actually, like this. So Kathopanishad is one of the main contributors, but other Upanishads as well, like this. So this is the original, where the original in the Vedas. Later came, there's other texts, of course, about these, Itihasa. Itihasa means iti ha-asa. This, you know, this was, this meaning history. This is what was. And so itihasas, you have the Ramayana Mahabharata like this. And these are also, they're taking, we say mythology. Mythology because the base of it is they're true historical facts and truths you can learn from so much. And then there's some embellishment also put on. How much is embellishment, how much not? For learning from it doesn't really matter to us, so we don't really look into it. You know, people can argue how much of the story there is as it was, how much was added because the poet or author wanted to add. That's not the essential thing. What can you learn from it is the essential thing. So that's what we're more interested in. And Bhagavad Gita, of course, is from Mahabharata. It's the central part, and there you can say. Then you also have later, you have the Puranas, where the same teachings are put in story form. From what I learned, Vishnu Purana is the original, more authentic, and then slowly other ones came in and everything were added. These actually later ones, like Gita and the Mahabharata Ramayana, we'll call Smriti. Smriti is not the Smriti, remembering, because people remember the teachings, great, you know, great scholars in this, and then they put it down. Vedavyasa himself put down as the Mahabharata, but it's still Smriti, it's called different, it's not given the same status like this in any case. Then you have Bhashyam. Bhashya are the commentaries on these, especially on Upanishad and Gita like this, because the teacher, it's fairly, even though this is 700 verses, Upanishad, some are very large, but Brihadaranyaka is very large, but many of them are much more terse. You need the commentary which gives you a lot more insight into it, because otherwise much harder to understand. So usually they're studied with Bhashya. We're not going to sit here and study the Gita Bhashya of Adi Guru Shankara, which is what we usually use, but the main points from it we'll bring into the class, like this main gist from there. Here Arun had said he has Swami Shivananji's book, I have here if people want. A lot of what he puts there, a lot of the points he gives, most of the points from Bhashya he puts in, and some other things too. So he added from some other things as well, but a lot of Shankara Bhashya main points are there, like this. So this is another part of the study. Then you also have different sutras. The most important for us is Vedanta Sutras, or called Brahma Sutras. Brahma Sutras, it takes all the teachings of Upanishads. So you first study Upanishads. Then it gives a lot of logic around to very clarify why this view is, any other doubts I might have about, it clarifies. Any doubts about it, it's going to go and clarify. So that's in this, and Brahma Sutra also Ibhashi in this. And then you have a lot of Prakarana Granthas, the Direktirisha Viveka, so many, Viveka Churamani, Atma Bodha, Tattva Bodha, so many, which take certain points, whether a general outlook at the frame of Vedanta, like Tattva Bodha gives a frame of what Vedanta is saying, or certain other ones, like the Direktirisha Viveka, take one prakriya, one methodology, or one point, and really expound on it to clarify, like this. Because again, equals MC squared, probably there's certain small calculation there you're going to have a whole chapter on that helps you to understand this kind of thing. So these are the texts all around that we have. In schools of Vedanta, what happens is there's what's called prasthanatrayam, the three major highways. The three major things that are major texts studied. First is our Bhagavad Gita. This is first. It's the more introductory, number one, and it gives very practical. It gives, because it puts it in a situation that's very practical for us to look at. It's not that we're sitting in a war now, but we know we have a struggle, internal, external struggle. So that's the struggle. That's the war we're talking about. People come and they say, I don't think I can study these things. Talking about war, why war in this? So, you know, no, you say, okay, it's because of that. It's talking about your internal struggle. That's the war. But still people, no, I can't take this about war. Okay, very good. Find something out. If it's not for you, no problem. Like this. So in any case, so this one gives very good introduction and application in our life. Upanishads are the original texts like this that are studied usually. And after, Brahma Sutra is the third, like this, which gives, to clarify the subtle doubt, any subtle doubts and any other ideas, other than the fact that I'm the conscious being that could come up in the mind, it deals with why it's not that. So in this way, this is how it's usually studied. And what one thing that's very special about the Bhagavad Gita, as we go through, you'll see, at the end of each chapter, there's like a small verse, which is the summary of the chapter, not the original. Some hundreds of years ago, great master Madhusudana Saraswati, he put those at the end. Om Tat Sat Shri Srimad Bhagavad Gita Su Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre Shri Krishna Arjuna Samvade, like this. There it says, Upanishatsu Brahma Vidyayam Yoga Shastre, in the Upanishad teaching of Brahma Vidya, of Vedanta, and the scripture on yoga. So looks at both. It teaches the preparation, the Karma Yoga aspect, as well as the Vedanta aspect. So that's a special thing here, so it gives you both. Where the Upanishads won't give as much the preparation. Still, our focus will be more the Vedantic view, but we won't, you know, it does talk about, so we will look at that as well. So that's one specialty thing here. If I'm not mistaken, I think he also named the chapters, Shri Madhusudana Saraswati, I'm not completely sure, so don't take that as a fact. I just think it's like that, because usually it just says first, second chapter like this beforehand. So this is the specialty. And in the Bhagavad Gita, the actual philosophy starts in verse 11, chapter 2. So in next class, we'll give a background which would cover the chapter 1, just the whole background like this. Then from the week after that, we'll actually go into actually what Lord Krishna is teaching, because the first chapter isn't as necessary to really go through in this way. You can read that. In our class, I don't have too many copies, I'll try to get more. And one thing I can do for people that aren't here, I can either mail or just scanned copy, we can do it for now, maybe. This is one of Swami Dayananda's disciples, is Swami Paramarthanandaji. And this one, it just has the text in Sanskrit with transliteration. That's one important thing, Sanskrit and English and transliteration, because not everybody reads the Sanskrit. And then word by word translation, verse translation. So then it's very simple that way. Because commentary can always take and read, but in the class itself, it's not really necessary like this. Because what happens is, I personally, when I go to a class, myself as a student, I like having just like this without the commentaries, because very hard after you read the verse not to start looking at. And the commentary can be brilliant, but he's talking about, you know, one concept, but we're talking about other concepts, very hard, your mind gets split. So you can read, But in the class, whatever concept we're discussing will be useful at that point in time. And he's a very great scholar, one of the Vedantic scholar. And also then his translation will be going directly in line with the Vedantic teaching like this. So this is other reason why this one. So I have a few copies. So I'll have enough for those in person. I'll just scan and send to those who are not in person. If somebody really wants to get one, I can try to get other copies and send you. It's not something you'll just go to Amazon or something find. You can try, but I don't think it's easy. But from his place, you can order in India and they send you. His students just put it together and send you like this. He's in Chennai. Like this. And he doesn't go around much. He's just there. It's not that he'll come here and give talks. He's there. Once or twice goes to other places in India for some programs. Otherwise, just there giving his classes. Like this. Very brilliant teacher. So this is just a small introduction, like this. I wanted to give some background for this. And then the bottom line in the end, we say this whole samsara, whole world of becoming, change, trouble, like this. Vedanta is saying the base for it is ajnana, the misunderstanding about myself. That I'm a conscious being and I confuse, I don't see it clearly. And then what is it that causes freedom from it, moksha, is clear understanding of myself that I am this conscious being. And the whole Vedantic study is just for that, just for this clear understanding. And one person will say, well, it's an emotional thing. I have many other problems, not just an intellectual thing. Well, when you clearly saw the rope, all the emotional thing went away, didn't it? When there's a misunderstanding of something, a lot of things is built up on it, which you see is what happens to our friend Arjuna here, just as it happens to us. Not seeing it, looking at it clearly, all the emotional stuff comes up. But then, after it's cleared, this is one of the important things in Bhagavad Gita. One conversation, the whole thing. External situation has not changed. Arjuna has changed, so he now can deal with it. So he can face no problem. So it's not to change our external situation. Yeah, some external situation, according to conditions, some have to be changed. Doesn't mean we'd never have to. But he didn't have to change the situation, only had to have clear vision. Clear vision, then no problem, like this. And the masters are living in this world just like you and me and everything. That's one reason why it's good to see Mahatmas, how they live. You know, I've seen Swami Premananda for 10 years. Senior disciple Swami Swami Shivananji. You know, all the stuff, everything, he's always happy, joyful, loving all the time like this. So, living in the world just like you and me. Whereas Swami Vishnavananji, my guru, I didn't spend as much time with, but also how much stuff. So the thing is not that the Mahatma's living in a different world, the Jnani's in a different world, just an understanding. So that's why our focus is on understanding like this. So again, small introduction. And last point, before we conclude for today, is first time I went to the Vedanta class with Vijay Kapoorji here about 10 years ago when I started going. I was very happy because I went to hear Swami Tattvedanandaji giving talks here. You'll hear a lot about him because he's the most brilliant teacher I've heard, and I hear to learn from him regularly. So he was giving talks here, so I used to come and hear him. And then when I moved to Fremont, then Vijay Kapoorji was starting class on Tattva Bodha, the introductory text. So I said, good, let me go, even though I've read these things over years, let me start from the beginning traditional way. So like this, I went to class. And then, as he starts, everybody took out their notebooks. Oh, okay, so I borrowed a pen, paper from somebody, and I scribbled some notes in this. And I still have the notes. And one thing we'll go over next week from those notes. So for my study and for teaching, they would be useful. But in any case, taking some notes I very much recommend, because then you review them, especially before the next week, the day or two before, just review them. Then it brings your mind back into it. Then as you go next time, it builds from there. So in this way, it's very, find it very useful. So, you know, don't. Some people, they try to write every word, but main points you'll find very helpful like this you can find. So I just recommend that. It's very useful in the study. Because, you know, then, you know, after we finish a chapter, you go back, you study, or sometime later, you read the chapter, you go back to notes. Very, very helpful like this. I very much recommend. So with that, let's finish for today. And yeah, we'll discuss more next time. Enough points for today. Already giving so much that one information can make the mind tired like that. Dachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.